The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Back. 21 hours have come and gone. We are here. We're going to do something very special these first 2 hours tonight. We're going to spend more time with Dr. Raymond Keller, PhD, about the amazing Valiant Thor story. Valiant Thor, who purportedly lived in the Pentagon for 3 years as a, quote, guest. He is not from this planet. He came here with three crew members, two women and another man. We have photographs of them at a UFO meeting in 1958 in New Jersey. We've talked about this with Ray before. We're also going to talk with K.T. Frankovich tonight. There's a fascinating angle that involves K.T. with this whole story. But first, let's welcome Ray back. Hello, Ray. Thank you for being here. How are you?
Hello, Jeff. It's a great pleasure to be here again.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad to have you on. This is going to be a lot of fun. Let me start with seeing if KT is on the line and we can hear her already. Are you there, KT?
I'm here.
Hi. It's good to hear your voice. How are things in Florida?
About the same. You don't want to visit here.
I know.
That's
I understand.
That's the place to come to.
I know. Well, I'm glad.
I apologize for my voice. I have the flu. So
yeah.
It sounds terrible. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, it's not as bad as you think. Believe me, it's fine.
I am thrilled to be here. I've never met Ray, but this is a topic that really, really interests me.
The pivotal figure in this is certainly Valiant Thor, but I think equally as much for tonight's conversation, we need to mention Madeleine Roediger. KT, let me ask you first, how did you meet Madeleine, and who is she? How does she figure into this story? And then we'll get to Ray.
Madeleine was Adamski's quote-unquote partner in taking pictures of Thor's craft and dealing with him. And the two of them had, from the pictures I had, they had two cameras working and an 8mm going, and they clicked off as many pictures as they could of his craft. But what was interesting was one of these cameras was a Polaroid. And there is no way anyone can mess with a Polaroid picture.
Correct.
Because it's developed inside the camera.
That would have been what year, KT? 1962, something like that?
Well, here's what happened. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, okay?
Sure.
In 1999, I came out with my book, Where Heavens Meet. Timothy Good came out with his book, Alien Base. Great book. Loved it. And we had contact with each other.
Uh-huh.
So I saw the pictures in his book. And he had several photos in his book of Thor's craft when Howard Menger met with Thor's people, the same craft. Anyway, I came out with my book and I lectured, a huge lecture, at Clearwater, Florida. Now, I didn't have a background in UFOs. I didn't know anyone, really. I was just getting my feet on the ground. And I was asked to lecture, to do two lectures.
Uh-huh.
I had had experiences all my life. And if anyone's familiar with Charles Hall, like Charles Hall, I was trying to figure out what the heck is going on here. Anyway, when I lectured at Clearwater, one of the first lecture was on the Lime Grove encounters I had with six digits on each hand, ETs. And then I decided the second one, and this was the only time I ever lectured on this, was to lecture on the time when I went to the Valley of the Dry White Bones, a 3.5 point of demarcation.
Yeah,
no
we
craft.
Talked about that before.
Yes, no craft. I just went over 4.5 hours missing
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I wasn't real sure how I was going to present it. So I just decided just to tell the audience exactly what happened and how I absorbed it. So I did, and the audience was huge. I mean, there were people all the way out in the hallways. They had the doors open. It was wall-to-wall mm-hmm. people. Madeline heard that lecture. And when I lectured about it, I began by saying, this is going to sound strange to you, when meaning as I was talking to the audience.
Nothing you say sounds strange to me, KT.
Oh, well, I said this occurred in 1967 in Monmouth Beach, New Jersey. And I said, now, what you have to hold in mind is that I moved from New Jersey a few years later, and I was in Florida on Key Biscayne about the year 1970, and I didn't tell many people about it because, I mean, it was just too hard to explain. And one day, about 1972, the phone rang, and the man on the other end said, my name is Dr. Henry Field. You don't know me. I'm out in California, but I heard about your experience with the valley. But I don't know how he heard about it, because I didn't tell a whole lot of people. So I didn't say anything. He said, I know you don't know me, but I would really like to record this.
Mm-hmm.
If you wouldn't mind, he said, I'd be willing to fly to Florida, and I'd like to sit down with you and get an on-tape recorder. So I wasn't real excited about it, Jeff, because it's a hard thing to tell people.
Yeah.
And anyway, he talked me into it. Well, don't you know, the next day he calls and he says, well, I want to bring a historian with me, if that's all right with you. He's very accomplished, and he's very knowledgeable, and he's a rabbi. Well, I wasn't happy about that. I mean, now I got two people. So I finally said, all right, I'll meet you. He said, well, I've got a house in Coconut Grove,
uh-huh.
and we'll meet there, and we'll record. And, you know, back in those days, we had the reel-to-reel recorders. Now, what's extraordinary about this is I did not know who Dr. Henry Field was. I didn't even know during the time that this was recorded. Three times I spent hours there with these two men.
Right.
Dr. Henry Field, in 1941, he was appointed by President F.D. Roosevelt to join his staff. He was an anthropologist, and he was appointed as the anthropologist and personal advisor. He was on the Special Intelligence Unit of the White House and the director of the M Project. He also was very involved in the 666 study. I never knew this. Didn't have a clue the whole time we went through the valley. And as I said, it took hours. It wasn't until a few years later that I realized that recorder, which was a reel-to-reel recorder, that's what we had in those days.
Sure.
Those tapes are with the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a Nixon administration that was in office during that time. So the Nixon administration, the government, has those tapes, which were recorded back in 1972 about. Now, when I lectured, let's jump up to 1999.
We want to get Ray on here in just a minute, KT, so go ahead.
Okay, when I lectured at Clearwater, if Madeline heard it, here's the astounding thing. The pictures that she gave to me were taken in 1965 in Maryland.
65, all right. Yeah.
She and Adamski took the pictures on February 26th. It's the day of my birthday. The experience that I had of going to the valley happened in 1967 in Mammoth Beach, New Jersey. Very close to one another. Only a couple of years apart. Anyway, Madeline, when I talked with her at Clearwater after my lecture, she said, I have something for you. I'm going to make sure you get it. And like a week later, the photos arrived in the mail. I wasn't very knowledgeable about Thor. My only knowledge came from Timothy Good's book, Alien Base, with Howard Menger's pictures. And that was as much as I knew, but I knew they were original photos, and I knew they were valuable. So I tucked them away. And I had them. Those are the originals.
Well, I have them now, and I thank you very much for sending them out. You can look at them, all of you listening, by looking under Dr. Raymond Keller and KT's names and guests. Take the second link down, the Madeline Rotifer story link, and you'll see the color pictures on that page. There are three of them, and they were taken, again, as KT explained, and as Ray has explained as well. Well, that's a perfect way to bring Ray in here. Ray, tell us about these pictures and why the bottom of the ship looks curved and warped a little bit in some of the pictures.
Yes, as in the picture of the ship, the Venusian scout craft that was over the Great Pyramid in 1981, you also see that extension of the flange.
I've seen
there is a projection of rays or engaging of a force field on the craft. Otherwise, it resumes its normal shape.
Now, the interesting thing about these three-color pictures, and again, if you look for Madeline Rotifer, R-O-D-E-F-F-E-R, one of the links under guests, under Ray Keller and KT, you can click on that page, Madeline Rotifer story in her own words, and there's a link right at the top to a very interesting YouTube video, but the three color pictures we're talking about are right beneath that. They are Polaroids, they're not frauds, they are originals, and if you look below that, you'll see the writing that Madeline actually put on the back of each of these pictures. Those are her words, her writings. You can see them. February 26, 1965, 3:30 p.m. There you go. Now, she's standing out there with George Adamski. He's using her 8mm film camera, and these stills, the Polaroids, were taken by Madeline. Now, Ray, the other thing about this scout craft that Val Thor is in these pictures, is that it doesn't have the three traditional round spheres on the bottom. It's got two. The other one is a flat projection. Now, I've never seen that before, and I should also add that this is the same generic kind of craft that the Germans had in the late 1930s and early 1940s. It's got the same three round, some kind of energy devices on the bottom. But what about these pictures with one of the round spheres not there on the bottom?
It may have been retracted. Because
right.
it was hovering so low.
Uh-huh. All right. I've never seen or even thought about them retracting, but that's certainly a very viable and possible thing. Okay, very good.
Because while the scout craft can levitate off the ground, can actually use the condensers or capacitors, which is what those three balls are,
uh-huh.
as a type of landing gear in the case of a malfunction.
Oh, yes. Okay, very good. Understood. Now, Madeline Rutherford is so key to this, and these three pictures, again, she took along with George Adamski, who had to actually take her 8mm camera because she was shaking so much. And George had gotten word that Val Thor was going to show up that day and to be outside with a camera. George was very sick, all right? He didn't have long for this particular planet at that time. And it was kind of a tribute to him. Correct, Ray?
Yes. It was a flyby, much as the Air Force would do, where the one plane peels off as a salute and a fond farewell to a friend and colleague and ambassador to outer space.
Very good. Okay. Now, for those of you who don't know, back in the 1950s, those were the days, that was the era of the UFO ET contactee. Not abductee, contactee. And there were people who were contacted. We think it was a different time, perhaps different visitors. We don't know for sure. But these people were very unique. George Adamski was extraordinary. He primarily worked on the West Coast. He did go east to make a series of lectures on the East Coast. Tell us more about that, Ray. And that's how he ended up back there with Madeline Rutherford, basically, as a guest of hers in her home. He was giving lectures.
Yes, his mission on Earth to spread the message of the Space Brothers and Sisters was very successful in California. And he was looking to reach an audience on the East Coast, particularly in the Washington, D.C. area, which was the center of power. And he was in communication with various scientists. And as he wrote in Flying Saucers Farewell, there were at least three scientists who knew on the East Coast, who knew the truth about the Venusian presence on Earth. And so Adamski, although he was getting on in years and not as mobile and active as he had been, somehow managed to summon enough energy to keep on this tour, and with the help of Madeline Rutherford and setting up projectors and arranging meetings and so forth, he began his work in going up and down to the coast of various flying saucer clubs and UFO groups.
Right. Here's a little treat. There is a video, and we've got it up there on Madeline Rutherford's page. KT, I don't know, have you seen this video of Madeline?
No.
Okay, you're going to like this. Government employee Madeline Rotifer reveals her UFO past. It's only 5 minutes, but it's an actual interview with Madeline Rotifer. A UFO organization posted this, and I'm going to play a little bit of it for you right now. So here we go. This is a voice you haven't heard in a long time.
1965, when a lady from the circle, U.S. government employee Madeline Rotifer, participated in a contact and was present when Adamski filmed an alien spaceship with her own camera at close range.
We met him in March of 1964. I arranged a lecture at the Civic Center about 10 miles away at Rockville. And we became friends. I knew him only 1 year and 1 month, the last year of his life. And he visited from California here about five times in that last year of his life, just intermittent. He didn't stay at this house all the time. But on February 26th, approximately 8 o'clock in the morning, a space friend, contact of Mr. Adamski, came to this house. I was still asleep. But when I got up, Mr. Adamski told me that he had been told that we should get cameras ready for filming later in the day. And, of course, I had never seen one so close before, or I didn't expect that they were going to come hovering that close in my yard. I would have rented a Polaroid or prepared with more cameras, but Mr. Adamski actually helped me put film in the little 8mm Bell and Howell movie camera. And he had film in his Kodak camera too. And we waited. Now, they did not tell him what time they were coming, but this was earlier in the morning, but this was middle of the afternoon, about 3:30, when we noticed them at a distance. And we were at the dining room window looking out, and they came in closer. And by the way, three more spacemen came and knocked at the door just before the incident. And Mr. Adamski went, and they told him they said, get your cameras ready, they're coming. Now that is how close he was associated with those people from other planets. And it's difficult to believe, but they looked just like American. One of them had brown hair, and one had dark hair, and one had slightly gray hair. And they parked in a car, I believe it was an Oldsmobile, but I don't know the year, down here at the street when they came, and then the spaceship came. And we went outside, but I had a broken leg. I had fallen the month before in my living room, and I was in a walking cast. And but I was able to walk around, but with a little limping difficulties, but I did get around. And but when we came out on the porch up here and started to film, he told me to film, and he was going to film. I said, George, I can't do this. I'm too wobbly. And I had not had the camera but 2 months. My husband had given it to me for Christmas just 2 months before. So I handed him, he said, okay, I'll do it. So I gave him my camera, and he laid his down, and he filmed it then. I started, you know, but I wasn't sure of myself, and I didn't want to miss it. So I gave the camera to him, and he finished filming it. But I was, you know, pumping around in the background and able to walk, of course, without too much difficulty with his cast on. But they only stayed about approximately 10 minutes. They did not land. They did not get out of the spacecraft, but there were glimpses of people through the round windows. And they maneuvered. They came in here. It was a low humming and a low swishing sound. And they came in. When they got close here, they came in very slowly. And it was round, and there were three of these, well, about this size, I guess, these landing gears underneath, and they were going like this, retracting in and out. And they told George later it was for stabilization. If they put all of them out, they would have had to land. And they kept one retracted all the time, and the other two were going in and out. But anyway, low swishing, low humming sound. And it wasn't real loud, but there was definitely a motor sound accompanied with it. And it was a blue, a brilliant royal between a royal and a purple and blue in color. It was a beautiful blue and deeper blue than this. And it was round. And as it moved, it looked crooked, you know, and on the film it shows this slight distortion. And it looked, you know, lopsided and so on. But they were moving and putting on this performance for Mr. Adamski to back up, you know, his efforts to get the world leaders to tell the truth about the visitors from other planets. They were demonstrating, they wanted him to capture this on film, their abilities to do certain maneuvers. And they wanted him to have this proof to show the people of the world, because our world governments have better film and they haven't shared any of them with us. And they wanted Mr. Adamski to have this piece of film to show, you know, to the audiences when he was speaking, how they do these certain maneuvers. They did this on purpose.
There you go, KT. How's that?
You know what's so interesting about this? She had told me about, they actually, in the picture, the stabilizers look like a wheel, kind of.
They look like a half of a ping pong ball is what they look like.
Yeah.
They're round.
Yeah, okay. But what's interesting about this is that, you know, Betty Hill and I were really close.
Who?
I miss Betty Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Betty,
okay.
Betty
yeah.
was my buddy. And we both had UFOs coming into our places all the time. All the time. I've had triangles, I've had the discs, I've had the bell shape. Never had one with the design that Thor's is. I've never seen one like that. But they even showed me underwater UFO. This was got to be, Betty and I used to talk every day, and this was a game we played, because they would come into her property too, and up in New Hampshire, I'm in Florida, right? And so when she would see one, she would wave and say, "Hey, say hello to KT for me." And then when they would come into my property, I would wave and say, "Hey, say hello to Betty." The other thing that struck me about...
Now, let me tell our listeners, Betty Hill, Betty and Barney Hill, were the two most celebrated abductees in UFO history. I guess that's the best way to phrase it. Betty and Barney
yes.
Hill. All right.
Yes, they broke more records. I mean, even on television, you know, you have to remember back in those days when they went public, we had a problem with our news media because they never showed an interracial couple together. Betty and
right.
Barney were the first couple ever
right.
aired on television.
Right.
I mean, they broke so many records, it was unreal. But anyway...
Well, let me say one other thing, KT. Excuse my interruption, please. On the page that says Madeline Rodifer, Story in Her Own Words, that link... When you click on that, you'll be able to see the three pictures that we've been talking about. They were on I don't believe they were Polaroids. They were Kodaks from George's Kodak camera, because she's identified them as strip number 8, number photo number 5, etc. So these came from Adamski's.
One of them was Polaroid.
That would have been the first one then at the top. Okay.
Right. One of them was Polaroid, and the other one was Kodak. You're right. But here's the thing. You know, also, they were talking about how the UFOs, Madeline said, how the UFOs came in kind of like a tribute for Adamski. He didn't have long to live, and this was their farewell. Well, the ETs did that for Betty Hill, too. It was unbelievable. They sent out a huge diamond-shaped mothercraft. And in her last days, they actually came over my place first. It was gigantic. I never was so scared underneath a UFO, because it was so huge. I realized if it just came down a little bit more, it was so huge I couldn't run to get out of the way. If it landed, I would be squashed. But it went to her house, because when it passed over me, I got the telepathic message, it's about Betty, it's about Betty, it's about Betty. And it took probably, oh, it was going very slow. You could outwalk it. It was going so slow. Probably 5 minutes for it to completely pass over me. But that night, they went to her house. And I couldn't call her. This was in the last, she was in the last stage of cancer. She was about 2 weeks away from passing away. And I had to wait till the morning. In the morning, my phone rang. And Betty was on the phone, and she was screaming, Katie, guess what? They came last night. They came. I said, I know they came, Betty. I saw them first. They came over me and said, it's about you. I said, what did they do? She said, well, she had on a cast on her arm. And at that time, she was sleeping on the couch downstairs in her living room. She was very weak. This cast you could take off. It was detachable. But she kept it on all the time because that's where the tumor was in that arm. In the morning when she woke up, now she couldn't get up and walk. She had to be carried. That cast was on the other side of the living room on a table, but the back door to the kitchen was wide open. And I don't know whether you know the story about Herm Barney when they first had their encounter with the UFO and in the forest, when they were taken aboard and then they went home and realized something was to happen. Betty only returned home with one earring. And they knew something had happened. They couldn't figure it out. This was a special place in this forest where only these certain kind of trees grew. I don't know whether it was an oak or what. But anyway, they decided to ride back to that spot and see if they could find it, the earring. So they got in their car and they went back to the spot where they had had this encounter the night before. They were trying to piece it together. And then they couldn't find it, so they went back home. When they got home, the back door was open. The earring was on the kitchen table, and the leaves from these trees, somebody had put them down on the table to form a perfect circle around the earring. So this back door being opened in her kitchen was really, really significant. People think, I think they tend to think that ETs don't have emotions. They do. And they have a sense of humor.
Well, it depends on which group, eh?
Yes. The two races that I've encountered most do, and they both are what we would call good. But, you know, the universe is full of things. So you always get, even on this planet, we got evil people and we got good people. I just have never encountered the evil ones, only the good ones. I would like to know is, where is Thor currently? Has anybody seen him?
Well, let's
currently?
Go back to Dr. Ray and ask him about that. What do we think, Ray?
Yes. There is a hidden moon or satellite, an artificial satellite of Venus called Neith, and it's been detected on occasion by astronomers with a limb effect on the backside of Venus, and he is over there.
But he hasn't been seen on Earth. When was the last time he was seen here on Earth? Do you know?
Frank Stranges would have been the one to see him, right?
Yes, and probably around the early 2000s.
So he was here that long, that recent, so 18 years, something like that, 16, 18
yes,
years?
Yes, Dr. Stranges had reported many encounters with Valiant Thor over the years, and his wife had even seen him in the audience of some presentation that Dr. Stranges was doing.
Interesting. Now, Valiant Thor, if you'll take a look again under, in guests, under Dr. Raymond Keller, PhD, and K.T. Frankovich, Look under there, and you'll see a world-exclusive Val Thor notes, and then at the bottom you'll see rare photos of Val Thor. Those go together. I'm going to put them on the same page here before we're done with the program, but what we have are pictures of Valiant Thor and his three crewmates, two women and a man, at this daytime meeting, UFO meeting, at a farm, at Howard Menger's farm in New Jersey. And the date again?
That was in, there was two meetings, March and July.
That was a July meeting, I think.
Yes, the July meeting. Mm-hmm.
All right, 1958?
Yes, and then the August C. Roberts letter is also posted there confirming that date, the 13th of July.
Right. Now, Ray has been with us three, four times now, and he has created three books, and they are remarkable. They're all about Venus, and if you take a look, world-exclusive Valiant Thor notes, you'll see more information about Ray's books, Dr. Raymond Keller. But most importantly, at that particular location, on that link, I want you to take a look at the handwritten notes. All right? Now, after you've opened that page up, you need to go back and scroll down under Ray Keller's name and guest to rare photos of Val Thor. For those of you who haven't seen these photos, click on that link and open it up and scroll down a little bit. There's some information about Ray, his work. You can see all three of his books there. Scroll down, and then you'll come across some pictures. After the two pictures of the blonde lady in the shorts and out in the field, and the flying saucer researcher flyer, August Roberts, Augie, you can see his name there. Then you'll see pictures of a group of people sitting out on a farm, chairs, sitting around. That's the UFO meeting in July of 1958 in New Jersey at Howard Menger's farm. Now, you'll look at these pictures, and you'll see Valiant Thor and his crewmates. There are two women and a man. Ray, identify them for us, would you?
Okay, the two women, the one with the blonde hair is Jill. The one gentleman sitting next to him is the
Commander somebody.
Commander Don.
Commander Don, that's right.
Yes, and then the woman in blue that's shading her eyes is Tanya. And then the one with the that's writing in the notebook and with the newspaper is Valiant Thor.
That's Valiant Thor himself. If you scroll down a little more, there's a black and white picture of Val sitting in a chair holding his notes, looking across. And I want you to look at that picture, if you can follow all this. Just scroll down to find the black and white picture, past the color pictures, and you'll see Val Thor and his Commander Don and Jill and Tanya. Tanya, I don't believe, is in the picture there. I think she's gotten up. Maybe he's sitting in her chair momentarily. She might have gone into the house.
Oh, yes, I think so.
But I want you to look at the people at the meeting and look at what they're doing. Who are they looking at? They're looking at Valiant Thor. And I want you to look at the expressions on their faces. If you have a magnifying glass, it's fascinating. They are clearly looking at something that is very interesting to them, especially the couple to your left, man and a woman there. Amazing. Now, when you see the pictures of Valiant Thor writing on a folded newspaper, he's writing on, we just call it white notepaper. Okay? And if you will, go up to the top of the page and look. Let me find where these are now. It says, world-exclusive Valiant Thor notes. And load that page up. Now, mine doesn't want to load. But you're going to see the actual lined notepaper, the actual notes that Valiant Thor was writing in that picture. In fact,
Jeff,
in several
you'll
pictures.
You'll notice, too, that on some of the notes, it's shaded. In the area where the small, unlined white pad was, the same one that was in the picnic table. With the photos that Howard Menger took, that he asked Augie Roberts not to take a picture of, but he snuck one in anyway. There you see it. That's where the notebook, the other notebook, the smaller one, was placed in the box with these other notes.
Oh, interesting. All right. Number one, these are lined. Howard Menger. Book from Outer Space to You can be hoaxed themselves, hypo by some man, whether actually happened or not, wonder, maybe dreamed film to see UFOs. Can you read these? Well, I can't read them very well.
If a hoax, some area set up in this country, wife related to Venus or Martian, claims sister lives on Venus, wife with gold eyes from Elizabeth, New York, wife born in Elizabeth, New York, 500-year-old woman, Gray's letter, meaning Gray Barker. That was the promotion letter for the book.
Okay.
The pamphlet that was passed out at the...
So this is Valiant Thor writing his thoughts as he's taking this event in. He's talking about Howard Menger's wife, right?
Yes, and he wanted to find out as much about Howard Menger as possible. Frank Edwards had said that he heard about Howard Menger while he was in the Pentagon and went up to New Jersey to see for himself and investigate the situation.
Mm-hmm. Very good. KT, anything you want to say? I don't know if you can look at these or not from where you are down there.
I don't. I'm not on the internet. I don't have access to the
internet.
All right.
You still have a life then. Okay, I got you.
But you know the thing that is very interesting to me is that the four people are all very beautiful. And in the experience where I went to the 3.5 dimension to the Valley of the Dry White Bones, they are the same kind of people, very beautiful, very beautiful. They all appear to be about the same age as Thor and his associates. And I have had experiences where, I mean, at 13, one of them just suddenly appeared in the room with me. The wall looked like a cloud was going up the side of the wall, and there she was sitting at the table in her white dress and barefooted. And she brought a deck of cards with her. And she used telepathy, and I knew she wasn't a ghost because she was solid like me. That was scary.
Wow.
Ghosts aren't supposed to be solid. But the point is, they stuck with me all my life. And like Menger and like Betty Hill, we all have the same stories. They all continue to come in and visit. I was thinking when you were talking about the last time Thor's craft was seen here, I believe you said 2000, right? The year 2000?
Yes, in the early 2000s.
Would that have been the scout craft again?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So the big craft would have been up in orbit. They'd come down and travel around in the scout craft, I would assume.
Well, I was just thinking, I asked this because it's been very curious to me. The ETs follow me wherever I go, and they've always had a habit of coming in pretty routinely. But they haven't been around in a couple of years. I'm just trying to think. I think probably two, three years now. The last ones were three triangles. Came in, I was standing in the driveway with my neighbor, and it was at dusk, and all of a sudden, because there's no noise, they were the three of them lined up, tail to tail, I mean, just one right behind the other. They just swooped down about 30 feet, not even that, probably 20 feet, off the roof and right over our heads, and then began upward. And when the last one passed over, he did a little da-da-da-da-da-da. In other words, they turned the craft like they were, they don't have wings, but how a plane would do with the wings.
And my they wobbled like a pilot wobbling his wings.
Yeah, yeah, it was like a, hey, we're here.
Uh-huh.
And my neighbor, her eyes were bulging, and she looked at me and she says, is that? I said, oh, yeah, they come in all the time. But
when was this, KT? When was it approximately?
Well, I'm trying to, this is what I'm thinking. See, it was like two years ago, that's the last time they've been in. And this is unusual, because usually they'll come in pretty routinely, but it's been about 2 years. And I've been wondering, where are they?
What group do you think this is? Val Thor's group, same people or different? Same craft would be the same people, I would imagine.
Well, I think the one that at the Valley, there's no doubt in my mind, that's Val's group. The lady in the dining room, that's Val's group. I mean, they've been with me all my life. The six-digit ones, I've only seen them in the Grove, in the Lime Grove, twice. I had two different encounters with them.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Betty and I used to wave to the craft, and they used to go from my house to her house. So who knows who we were waving at, Jeff?
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
For the listeners out there that are interested in reading an excellent account of Betty and Barney Hill, John G. Fuller's a great reporter from the East Coast. His excellent book, The Interrupted Journey, was published by Dell Press in 1967. I think it's still available, maybe in a current edition, but it tells about how Barney Hill was a postal worker and his wife were going on a vacation to Canada. And up on Route 3 in New Jersey, and I mean in New Hampshire, in a forested area, is where they encountered the extraterrestrials, and were one of the first documented cases of missing time by the Dr. Benjamin Simon, famous psychiatrist of the time.
That's the encounter where her earring was missing.
Yes,
but, you know, she and I were talking one time, and she was sitting, I think it was her mother-in-law's porch, in the backyard, and one just came down and landed right in the backyard. I mean, that's how they are with us. You know, this is something real interesting. I think the public doesn't realize this. It just occurred to me, too, about a week ago. When you live a life like this, when you have them in your life all the time, you know, the public hears about it, and we try and verbalize it the best we can and describe things. But I think what the average listener doesn't realize is we love them. Betty loved them. I love them. Alex Newald loved them. And that's something that I think the audience doesn't realize a lot of the time.
I'm sure they don't. It's another dynamic
Betty
to this that people wouldn't think about.
Betty lives for them. Mm-hmm. I do too. When I see the craft, I run outside and I wave. It wasn't always easy for me. I had to adjust because, like I said, growing up, I had to figure out what the heck was going on here,
mm-hmm.
you know. But we do. We love them. Betty loved them to pieces. Oh, my God, she lived for them. She lived for
That's
them.
A part of Betty's life that I have not heard. That's very interesting.
We were very close, Jeff. Very close. In the end, when she got the cancer, she wanted to do radio programs, but she was on painkillers. And so this is how close we were. She said to me, KT, would you do the program with me? And if I start rambling, would you start laughing and cut me off? I said, sure. And we did quite a few programs together, and the public never knew. But we were so much alike.
Yeah.
We started talking about our past. We both had polio. We both had radiation poisoning. We both smoked corn cob pipes. I mean, it just went on and on and on and
That's
on. We
funny.
Were like two peas in a pod.
That's funny. Now,
yeah,
we want to mention before, I'm going to let you go at the top of the hour here because you're sick and you've been great this hour, and I'm going to cover some more ground with Ray. But KT's family, just so you know, you may recognize the name Frankovich. Some people pronounce it Frankovic. Her family was involved. They were giants in Hollywood. Tell us what your dad, your stepfather, produced.
No, it wasn't my stepfather. It was Uncle Mike Frankovich.
Uncle Mike. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah,
Mike Frankovich produced Exodus, Lawrence of Arabia, Bridge Over the River Kwai.
That was his son who did that. One of his sons did Bridge
Oh, my.
Kwai.
All right.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, my son did Chicago Hope. I mean, and then my other cousin, who's a female, she and I are first cousins, so we're real close. She was a leading political analyst with Dan Rather. And I went into the film industry, and I got the Gold Venus. I was the only woman in the world who ever received one. Only 19 were handed out. Spielberg has one. Oliver Stone. Feels good. It feels good.
You're in very interesting company there.
71. Yeah.
Yeah, you bet. All right,
anyway,
KT.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Thank you so much. And I'm glad I came on because I think this is important for people to know that those who live with ETs in their lives, and this would include Adamski, we love them. They're like an extension of our family.
Well, that's a very memorable, unforgettable statement, and thank you for that. Thanks for being here. You take
Ray,
care.
I'm so glad to have met you, and you are so interesting. Thank you so much for
doing
this.
Thank you, KT. I think that you and a fellow light workers are bringing the pieces of this puzzle together at this time, that it's a divine providence that all this is falling into place. And thank you so much for your contribution to the field of ufology.
And do look under the guest section for KT's link. You'll see a picture of the cover of her book. There's more information about it. Fascinating life she's living. Thank you, KT. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good night. All right. And we're going to wish her well. Hope she gets over the flu. She had a tough time lately, as a lot of good people have had. All right. Ray, hold on if you would. We'll come back another hour to go, and we're going to go through these links again and look at much more. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.